Coming up in this week's edition of Low Carb and Paleo Show, Heather Jacobson reveals to us what is the safe gluten threshold, the link between gluten sensitivity, depression, thyroid problems, and more, how pesticides may well be the cause for leaky gut syndrome, and the link between GMOs and many of the problems that are labelled gluten sensitivity. Alan and I recently had the pleasure of chatting with Heather Jacobson. And in this interview, she tells us about her journey to becoming gluten-free, which has, it must be said, passed many, many stops on the way. Like many thousands of others, the doctors she saw denied that she was gluten sensitive. In fact, as far as they were concerned, it was all in her head. Since then, Heather has gone on to find out that being sensitive to gluten, and not just gluten but many other grains, is at the heart of things like depression, thyroid problems, and so much more. She also shows us how things like pesticide can cause leaky gut syndrome, amongst other things, and how much of a link there is between GMO and many things that come under the heading of gluten sensitivity. She answers, what is the safe gluten threshold? Many may be surprised just how low it really is, and reveals why a startling 72 to 92% of people on gluten-free diets never heal, but more importantly, what they can do about it. So let's join Alan and Heather right now and get on with the show and find out the answers to these questions and more.
Good morning, Heather, and welcome to the Low Carb Paleo Show.
Thank you very much, first of all, for having me on. I'm excited to talk with both of you today.
I understand you have a website called Stuff Pepper. Can you tell us how you came to name it?
Sure. Stuffed Pepper is a community website for gluten-free and paleo living. We have recipes from chefs. We have health-related articles from medical doctors and researchers, and opinion posts from bloggers. And so the way the Stuffed Pepper name came about is I wanted it to be a place where, you know, we can give information to people searching on how to navigate the gluten-free lifestyle. And there were lots of already gluten-free this, gluten-free that websites out there. So I wanted a name that kind of stood out from the crowd. And through a lot of brainstorming, finally Stuffed Pepper came to me. And luckily the URL was also available, otherwise it wouldn't have worked. Because it's all online, of course. But I thought it was a great name because it's not only a delicious gluten-free dish, or can be gluten-free and grain-free, but it can also be a place that's stuffed with people and ideas, which is what a community website really is.
Yeah, that's good.
Nice, thank you. I've noticed, I've been following you, and I'm actually one of your contributors, but I've noticed that over time you moved more and more away from being gluten-free to being paleo. Can you explain how you progressed into that direction?
Sure. And do you mean me, or do you mean the Stuffed Pepper website?
Well, both.
Right. Well, and it's probably because both were happening at the same time. When I started Stuffed Pepper, it was sort of a gluten free-for-all, you might call it. I thought it'd be a place. At the time, I started in 2010, and I didn't see any other websites out there that had the same idea that I had, which is to gather people together to share resources, and gluten-free resources. And so at the time, I thought I would invite anybody that has something to do with gluten-free to come and talk about it. Let's have a conversation. Let's share recipes, tools, tips for getting better. Just not too long before I actually launched the website, I started to get really sick myself. And it's kind of funny timing. But I have actually been gluten-free since 2001. But around 2009, I started to get really sick again. And I think it's because when I initially went gluten-free, I was not indoctrinated on how to go gluten-free. In fact, no doctors wanted to test me for celiac disease. Most people thought it was all in my head. Some doctor laughed at me and gave me an antibiotic and sent me away. So I went home after that visit to my then boyfriend, my now husband, and said, oh, I guess I don't have a problem with gluten. Let's go have pizza and beer. And so we did, and I was sick the next day. And so I knew that I had a problem with gluten. But what I didn't know was, what's the safe threshold? You know, we called it gluten intolerance then. Mm. Now people call it gluten sensitivity. Can I have a slice of pizza once a week and still be okay? Or what is my threshold? Over time, it turned out that I was eating less and less gluten before, you know, feeling sick. And so probably what I have been doing essentially is eating a low gluten diet from 2001 to about 2009, and I'd been slowly still making myself sick. I didn't know about cross-contamination. I didn't know about all the sources, hidden sources where gluten would be, which is in everything, every processed food, medicines, everything. Even margarita mix. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
And I didn't know about safe thresholds, which I want to say now, it is my belief that if you have celiac disease or gluten sensitivity, that there is no safe threshold. It's not 19 parts per million. It's 0 parts per million. So I slowly was poisoning myself with gluten without realizing it. And then in the middle of my second pregnancy and afterwards, you know, I had hormones and all kinds of other things going on, mm-hmm. is when I got sick again. And so again, I went to a doctor searching for help. I spent thousands of dollars on diagnostic tests. And again, they kept telling me it's all in my head. I had one doctor say, oh, we'd all feel better if, you know, we ate less bagels. And I was like, no, I can't eat any bagels. I don't eat any wheat. And, you know, just a little bit and I'm sick. But he didn't get it, you know. Mm. I had another doctor say, oh, you have depression. And you know what I did? I burst out crying when he said that to me.
I can understand that.
I was like, and so of course, you know, it proved to him that I had depression, but, and of course I probably had a little bit because I was sick. I had terrible brain fogs. I had terrible insomnia. I could not sleep through the night. No matter how tired I got by having a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, I still couldn't sleep. Mm. I couldn't eat. Everything that I ate made me sick. I had chronic sinus infections. And but nobody could help me. So I ended up having to diagnose myself. And through research and listening to my body, I figured out that I had this perfect storm of adrenal fatigue, candida, and intestinal permeability. Now, I don't know if you guys talk about any of these issues on your show. I know this is a low-carb and paleo show, so I don't know how much you get into health aspects, you know, gluten-related disorders, if I need to define any of those three disorders.
Did you, did you have issues with your thyroid as well?
Yes. Yes, and I've had issues with my thyroid. See, I went gluten-free in 2001, but before that, I'd had digestive issues as far back as I can remember. And I had a colonoscopy at 20. Again, the doctor didn't find anything, told my dad it was all in my head. A few years later, I had my appendix out. And a few short weeks after my appendix was out, I got a hyperthyroid condition. And I was always convinced that there must have been a connection, but no doctors saw a connection, but I thought there must be. Mm. So I'm pretty sure it was gluten was the connection. But now, later in life, after going hyperthyroid, I had to take the radioactive iodine treatment, which eventually turned to hypothyroid. So I had been able to regulate it with a daily supplement, a daily pill. But, you know, again, probably the gluten caused me, you know, the cross-contamination and the little bits of gluten that I was probably eating, as well as changes in hormones, you know, with my second child, is probably a perfect storm for setting me up for, you know, further complications.
Right. I have heard of other people with gluten allergy mentioning thyroid issues. Do you think that gluten sensitivity creates a thyroid issue, or is a thyroid issue might...
That I can't tell you. There is definitely a connection between thyroid and gluten issues. I think they say something like 14% of people with celiac disease have a thyroid autoimmune condition. There's actually a big thyroid summit, health summit going on right now. Sean Croxton from Underground Wellness is hosting it. And so those are the experts that they would know. I just know that I have a problem with thyroid. I'm pretty sure my mother does and probably has a problem with gluten. So there is a connection. Which came first? It's probably a chicken and egg syndrome. Gluten, you know, and especially if you have intestinal permeability or also called leaky gut, will be attacking your body in other ways. So it could have been from the gluten. My opinion would say it's probably gluten the cause of it, but I'm not an expert in that.
Would you suggest that if someone comes and mentions I have a thyroid issue, should they look into the gluten connection and go gluten-free to see if it improves?
Well, I would definitely have them talk to a doctor about that. It depends on what kind of symptoms you're having. Gluten affects people in all different ways, and that's what makes it so tricky to diagnose a gluten sensitivity, especially. Because it's different from celiac disease, and the way that it affects people, there's 200 disorders and counting that are related to gluten. And so it affects people in different ways. It can affect your hormones. It can affect your brain. It can affect your skin. Not everybody complains of digestive issues that have a problem with gluten, but certainly a lot of people do complain of digestive issues. But if you are if you have loss of energy, if you seem to have some of the classic thyroid symptoms, there isn't any reason not to check thyroid, levels when you talk to your doctor.
Right. For us, our listeners that are thinking about moving into paleo, I've noticed you have an article that explains 7 things you should know about going gluten-free. Can you explain how you suggest to your readers to move away from just being gluten-free and moving into grain-free?
Sure. And it goes back a little bit to your question, why did stuffed pepper go from gluten-free to paleo? And so this is the culmination of what I've learned over time, that if you're going to go gluten-free, you really have to go paleo if you want to heal yourself. And the first point is also, I already mentioned, that you don't have to have celiac disease to have a problem with gluten. You'll see a lot of publications out there that say that the gluten-free diet is a fad diet, and unless you have celiac disease, you don't need to worry about gluten. But that's completely wrong. As I already mentioned, there's over 200 disorders and counting that are related to gluten, and celiac disease affects just less than 1% of the population. But gluten sensitivity is a real medical disorder that has finally reached official status back in February 2012. It is a real disorder, and estimates are 8 to 14% of the population, world's population, is affected by gluten, has gluten sensitivity. Some people think it might be as much as 40%, and we're still unraveling the mysteries of gluten and how it affects us. So, those numbers might change over time. So that's point number one, is that you don't have to have celiac disease to have a problem with gluten. And if you've had tests for celiac disease and they all come back negative and you're still feeling ill, there's no harm in trying a gluten-free diet for a month to see if you feel better.
Yeah, right. What puzzles me is that, 20 years ago, there was no such issue as gluten-free allergy or food allergies in general. Do you have any your own opinion as to why now people seem to be much more sensitive to food than they used to be?
I have a couple of opinions, but I don't know if they're, factual. One of them is that 20 years ago is about when I had my first colonoscopy. So I was having problems 20 years ago. I was having problems as far back as I can remember. Back then, they called it irritable bowel syndrome, which basically means something's bothering your bowel, but we don't know what. Right? And so avoid these foods and maybe you'll feel better.
Yeah.
So that was part of it. So gluten could still have been affecting us then. Celiac disease did exist 20 years ago and 50 years ago. There has been one study that's shown, however, that the incidence of celiac disease has increased fourfold. They took frozen DNA from some community in the Midwest of the United States from 50 years ago, and they compared it to the same population of people today, 50 years later, and there's the gene for celiac disease had increased by four times. So there is more of an incidence as well. It's not just that we are diagnosing it more. Right. So my opinion is that it could come from our genetic engineering, or I shouldn't say genetic engineering. I guess it's genetic selection of wheat.
Right.
So we don't call it genetically modified wheat, but we have been genetically selecting for wheat over time, and the wheat of today is much different than it was 50 years ago.
Yeah. My understanding
is more dense. Sorry.
Right. My understanding is that the wheat grown in America, the hard wheat, has seven times the amount of gluten than the European wheat. And that's why America seems to have much more tendency of gluten allergies than Europe does.
It makes sense to me. It makes sense.
Right.
So
there's another issue. Do you think that genetically engineered might have an effect also on damaging our guts and allowing for leaky gut syndrome?
Absolutely. There's been a couple of studies that have come out recently to show that the pesticides that they put on the genetically modified crops, corn and soy being the most prevalent, do cause intestinal permeability or leaky gut, but a side effect of which is food allergies, food sensitivities.
Right.
So yeah, same thing that gluten causes.
Right, glyphosate, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, Roundup and glyphosate. So, and some of these crops also contain the toxin in the food, actually. So we ingest it as well.
Right, that's the BT toxin. Thuringiensis, and it actually can still be living in our intestine, causing us problems.
Yes.
So a lot of people that have gone gluten-free thinking, that they're doing themselves, better by taking gluten out, often go and eat corn tortillas instead of wheat tortillas. They're still eating corn, which the majority of in our country is genetically modified. So it's going to have the BT and it's going to have the glycophosate, and that's going to continue to cause issues as well.
Right.
Unless you go organic. If you go organic, you might be able to avoid that because it's not genetically modified.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand you have a new program that just started a few days ago or a month ago that is 30 days to a whole gluten-free program. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. I just wanted to go back to the seven things about growing paleo. Point number two is that 74 to 92% of people on the traditional gluten-free diet never heal.
Really?
Yes, it's a staggering statistic that nobody's talking about.
I'm gobsmacked.
And it boggles my mind that nobody's talking about it. I can provide you guys with the medical studies that show that. I've got two studies. So one says 74%. That one was done by the National Institutes of Health. And the other says 92%, and that was done by, I think, a group of Italian doctors.
Mm-hmm.
74 to 92% on the traditional gluten-free diet, which is no wheat, barley, or rye, never heal. They go back and they do biopsies later and they still have problems with their intestines.
Okay.
And so why would this be?
Yeah.
And there's different reasons. I think cross-contamination, which I touched on briefly before, was making me sick. Inherently gluten-free grains like rice, quinoa, any of those that people choose to go to eat after they're taking wheat out of their life, a third of those grains are actually cross-contaminated with gluten. So we could be getting cross-contamination. But also in my studies, I've seen that gluten, first of all, is not that easy to separate from the rest of the wheat plant. And even if we were able to separate it, there's other parts of the wheat plant that might be causing us problems as well. So our definition of what is gluten is very loosely applied. Yeah. And so in my opinion, really, the majority, the whole wheat plant could be causing us problems. There's a lectin called WGA, which stands for wheat germ agglutinate. Mm-hmm. It's not in the gluten, it's outside the gluten plant, but that's known to cause a lot of problems as well. Mm. So going gluten-free, as we're calling it, may not be, you know, the right way about going about it. And there was one study done by Dr. Fasano. You're probably familiar with that name. He put some test subjects on a grain-free diet to see if that would help, and sure enough, it did.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
A grain-free diet is actually healing if you do it long enough. So that's one of the reasons why going paleo, again, you're getting closer to going paleo by going grain-free.
Tina Turbin said something very similar. She said, you know, cutting wheat out isn't good enough half the time. You've got to cut out all grains virtually.
Yeah, there's many different reasons, and maybe our body just doesn't like grains. Maybe we just chose wheat because, you know, it all comes back to a study done in the 1950s and a little bit earlier by William Dickey, and a Dutch pediatrician who noticed that his celiac patients were having problems with wheat, which was their staple crop at the time. But that doesn't mean that other grains couldn't also be affecting us. It just came from that early definition and has expanded to now.
Yeah. I mean, for instance, I have a very bad sensitivity to rice.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
I've heard people have sensitivities to rice. Yeah.
It's not pleasant if I have rice or rice products. And so, you know, I mean, I tend to steer clear of those anyway. Doing low carb is probably the safest thing I can, because obviously all grains are out anyway.
Yes, exactly. There are proteins in all grains that are similar to the gluten proteins in wheat. So it makes sense. The other point I like to make is that you can't trust gluten-free labeled food products to be gluten-free, and you can't always trust that the gluten-free menu items in a restaurant are gluten-free. And my major point on that is cross-contamination.
Yeah. Are there any particular culprits that you know of in, say, the fast food chains?
I don't eat fast food.
No. Avoid fast food. I mean, there's no way to be gluten-free in fast food. And unless a restaurant is certified by a nationwide certification program to be gluten-free, I wouldn't trust it.
The same way. And chain restaurants, too. Because even if they've been trained, you know, you're still relying on a long chain of people in the restaurant to get your order right. Mm. So it is possible to eat out gluten-free safely in the right establishment, but it takes a little bit of work and research to find that, you know, place where you can eat safely. And I've always found, unfortunately, it has to be more of the higher end restaurants, because they pay more attention to every plate that goes out. Mm. They're not working on volume here, they're working on quality and fresh ingredients. So it is possible to eat out. But, you know, if you're going gluten free in the beginning, I say steer clear of restaurants and processed foods altogether, because you're trying to heal yourself, so you want to make sure you're taking every step possible.
Right. And even if they have a gluten-free menu, but the rest of the restaurant is regular, then you still have a chance of cross-contamination.
Absolutely. And French fries might be cooked in a fryer that had wheat in it. There's lots of ways that you could get cross-contaminated. I love when I go to a restaurant that says they have gluten-free pizza, but then at the bottom they have a little disclaimer that says, "We are not a certified gluten-free kitchen. We're gluten-free friendly." That's a sign to me.
Okay, let's leave.
Right, exactly. And remember, a lot of restaurants are jumping on the bandwagon because they think this is a hot new fad, the gluten-free diet. So now suddenly it's everywhere. But that doesn't mean that it's safe. And I think it's causing more problems in some ways, because everybody's jumping on without knowing what they're doing. Another point that I like to bring up is that 75% of adults have a decreased ability to digest lactose, and 50% of people who have celiac disease also have reactions to cow's milk proteins. So if you're going gluten-free, I think you need to take dairy out, at least for the first month, because at this point you don't know what other things are causing you problems. If gluten's caused intestinal permeability and you're having food reactions, you should take out dairy until you start to heal, until you know if you have a reaction to it or not. And that's the same with the other top 8 food allergens. Again, gluten causes leaky gut. We discussed that. So does genetically modifying corn and soybeans. So you take out grains, you take out the top 8 allergens. Definitely soy, we know, is a grain, but it's got its own set of problems anyway.
Yeah, right.
So I like to keep that out of the diet. And so that's 5 and 6 is leaky gut and soy. And then the last point I like to make is that wheat actually contains opioids, which is the same peptides found in morphine, cocaine, and heroin. So wheat is actually making you physically addicted to gluten. Mm.
Yeah.
And so you need to, if you're going to go on a gluten-free diet, you really kind of have to rip off the Band-Aid and break the addiction. And you can't do that by necessarily taking gluten and replacing it with gluten-free processed foods, because you're never going to get that same, you know, comfort food feeling that you used to have with your favorite mac and cheese or whatever it was. And also, you guys probably know about this. There's also the addiction cycle of the sugar
cycle
in your body that you need to continually replace, the sugar up, the sugar down. So again, by going low carb, you know, you're breaking that, first of all, that addiction to the opioids and the addiction to the sugar, which is really the hardest thing for going on a gluten-free diet.
Yeah.
And so, of course, now we're at a diet that is gluten-free, grain-free, dairy-free, allergen-free, GMO-free, soy-free, vegan-free, low-carb, sugar-free, and non-processed. Is there anything left to eat?
Loads.
There's plenty, and it's basically the paleo diet.
Exactly, yeah. It's the paleo diet. So, I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's free, everything of this, and that there's nothing left to eat, but then the thing that we want to point out is there are lots of great things to eat, and they're healthy and they taste good. You probably have to do some cooking of your own, you know, and which is a fun thing to do, in my opinion. You know, it might take some getting used to if you're used to getting everything out of a box. But I like to say that healing begins in the heart. I'm sure you've heard that term before. And also the kitchen is in the heart of the home. So if you're going to start healing, you're going to have to start by cooking meals, or at least somebody who's taking care of you or taking care of your child needs to start cooking. Mm. Go on the paleo diet. You'll find all kinds of delicious meals. Like Chef Alan knows himself, he's got a paleo French cooking book. And we've got lots of recipes on stuffed pepper that also help people get on a paleo diet. There's tons of, I've got tons of cookbooks that are all, you know, paleo cookbooks from all kinds of talented chefs. So there's plenty to eat out there. And that's what people need to focus on, what we can eat now, not what we can't.
Yes, absolutely. And when people mention there's nothing left to eat, mostly they refer to processed food.
True. There's not much processed food left to eat.
No. It's absolute, a complete ban on processed food, and start eating fresh food.
Yeah. And I think sometimes the most vicious opponents to paleo are the fast food and the convenience food manufacturers.
Sure. Absolutely. They are. As Alan and I saw at the latest paleo conference, there are lots of paleo food manufacturers coming out now with good paleo options, beef jerky or buffalo jerky, you know, low-carb, paleo nutrition bars. And so there's some fast food stuff. You really do still have to learn to cook, and it's the freshest way to eat anyway and the healthiest. But, you know, it'd be nice to have a few. I mean, I'm a harried mom myself, so I definitely enjoy convenience foods if they're available. I cook almost, you know, I cook 6 days a week and most days. But if there's some convenience foods available that are healthy and nutritious, I'd be very happy with that too. Yeah. So I'm not totally anti-processed food. I just, you know, the processed food that's out there is not healthy for us.
No. Right. And so who's cooking on the seventh day? Your husband?
No. I try to get him to. Well, now that it's grilling season here, he'll be doing a little more cooking. So that's
okay.
Good.
Okay.
But I there's a restaurant. Sometimes we try to go out to a restaurant if I can find a safe place to eat. I still have problems with eating out sometimes, too. Or I'll get a rotisserie chicken from Whole Foods. That's my fast food.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, that's good.
And Alan, we need to do something about this men not cooking.
Chef Alan has 2 cookbooks, so we do know that that's true.
Yeah.
And my I'd like to say that he is a good cook. It's just a matter of when he's going to do it.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Cook doesn't have the time. I mean, he works full time, so.
Right, right. And so you want to tell us about your new program that just came out, the 30 Days program?
Yes. As you know, we have lots of delicious recipes on the Stuffed Pepper website, and that's all free access. All the information on our website is free. But, you know, I spent a lot of time following who's coming to the website and what are they doing, and we've had a lot of interest from Pinterest on our recipes. But I was wondering why people aren't always trying the recipes. They look at them, but they don't come back. And I know the recipes are good because we have a variety of chefs that submit recipes, so they appeal to a wide variety of tastes. Most of the recipes are not too complicated, and we don't get too crazy with organ meat or sea vegetables, although, you know, the paleo people are pushing that we need to eat more of that stuff for health. But it's all really delicious stuff, so why are they not following the recipes? So I came up with a meal plan mostly for myself, because I need to plan out my meals, especially with having, you know, two young kids. I can't be, you know, thinking off the cuff, running to the grocery store 2 or 3 days a week, trying to figure out what I'm going to make. I need a plan. So I came up with a meal plan, and I got a lot of hits on that. It was very popular. People loved the meal plan. But again, not all of them are following the recipes. Why? Why is that? Some people are buying the meal plan. We have a basic one that's free and a month-long one. It's only $3.99. And what I realized by talking to people in my local community, they keep coming to me and saying, I know I need to go gluten-free, but it's just really hard. I don't know where to start. And, you know, I can look at some recipes. I've tried this recipe here, that recipe there. And so it finally dawned on me that people need, you know, step-by-step instructions, step-by-step help to do this, especially if you have kids and, you know, in the same situation I am, where you just can't take the time to play in all the time. You're busy running around doing so many different things. Thinking about food is sometimes the last thing that you're thinking about. So that's why I created a 30-day program, which is a 30-day meal plan, but it also has grocery lists. So you get a new grocery list every week, a new meal plan every week, and then you get a daily email walking you through the recipes, the meal planning process, as well as action items on how to clean gluten out of your pantry, out of your medications, that sort of thing. We also have community support through the forum and other action items that are more sort of psychological and emotional to kind of help get your mind off this big, you know, lifestyle change and start thinking about exercise, start thinking about fun activities, other things as well. So that's what the program is in a nutshell.
Well, I'm at day 6 on your program, and it's very impressive. Thank you.
Oh, I'm glad you like it. But you're already an expert. You don't need to do the program.
Well, you know, I mean, you're never too old to learn new tricks. So I'm picking up a couple of tricks here and there. I mean, you know, that's what cross-training is all about, right?
True. Well, I'm glad you're liking the program.
If people want more information from you and about you, where's the best place for them to go?
They can go to the website. It's stuffed-pepper.com. Okay. And the 30-day program is easy to find because we just have a big orange button that says learn more here. There's a contact form on the website, and those contacts go straight to me. So if they need to send me an email or whatever, I'll get them. So we're pretty easy to find.
Excellent, excellent. So you've been living this type of lifestyle for how many, 10 years, maybe more than that?
Yeah, so I went gluten-free in 2001, or low gluten at the time, you know. So I've been 13 years without gluten, without breads, pastas, that sort of thing.
So if you were to start again now, knowing what you know now, is there anything that you'd do differently?
Yeah, I always like to say that there's no what ifs. I mean, you can't turn back time, so you can't, you know, spend time dwelling on the past if you can't change it. But yeah, I mean, I guess a part of me does wish that I had known to just take gluten completely out of my life, 100%. I didn't know anything about that. I did the best I could with the resources and knowledge that I had. But I might have saved myself several years of healing if I had gone completely 100% gluten-free. And also, I did listen to myself. I did trust myself. But there's always the doubt that comes into your head because doctors time and time again and family members rolling their eyes at you, doctors telling you it's in your head. You know, you have to trust yourself. Only you, I realize, only I care about my body as much as, you know, more than anybody else. And I know that something's wrong. So, I wish I had been more confident in my convictions that there's something going on here and not to let other people bring me down about it.
Excellent. So, yeah. I mean, one last question for you really is, I mean, where do you see yourself moving on to now in terms of the way that you help other people?
Well, I hope that this program can help more people. I know that people are struggling to go gluten-free. I'm not a very good preacher. You know, there are some people that come out and they can push people to try the gluten-free diet or try the paleo diet. It will change your life. I'm not so good at that yet, but I think that it's really the proof is in the pudding. So I like to take the scientific road and say, listen, all these medical studies show this. Listen, try it out and you'll see. This may work for you. So I really still want to help people as much as possible, but I think giving them the tools to do it is the best way. So for now, I'll be continuing to help promote the program, and then we'll see what goes on from there. I'm thinking about doing some other versions of the program. There's different types of diets out there, like FODMAPs and autoimmune protocol. Some people need to tweak their diets after they go paleo, so we might work on that or come up with some other meal plans. So I'll be working on that as far as Stuffed Pepper's concerned. I work part-time, you know, running Stuffed Pepper because my youngest is still in pre-K, but she'll be starting kindergarten in the fall and I'll have more time. So I don't know. We'll see what happens then. Okay, so I'm open to anything.
Will we be seeing you in print?
You never know. I always wanted to be a writer, you know, and a lot of the stuff that I have on my website can translate into probably an ebook at some point. But with being a mom of two young kids, right now it's just been going month by month, really. So we'll see what the future holds.
Thank you very much, Heather, for all this wonderful information, and thank you for spending time with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm sure our listeners got a lot of good information from that, and I wish you good luck and all the success you need for, you know, your program and everything else you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you very much. Have a super, super day.
Same to you.
You too.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.